You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. I'm with another superb Melbournean comic now. This is the wonderful Geraldine Hickey. Hello, Geraldine. Thank you so much for coming. I'm really excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here.
We met at brunch, didn't we, a couple of weeks
Easter
ago.
Easter Sunday.
Was it Easter Sunday, was
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was a special occasion. It was just
it was
a nice
Easter.
Brunch.
It was. It was lovely.
Very nice. And then, lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, me and Sarsky came to see you in your show at the Forum Theatre.
Yes.
Which is called Love and a Slab of Fudge.
Yeah, Love or a Slab
Love
of Fudge.
Love or a Slab of Fudge, big fun.
Yes.
I was too busy admiring the board game that works on the poster.
Pretty cool, right?
Like, oh, it's awesome. I love it. Yeah. So, have you ever been to the UK first?
Yes, I have. I went and did Edinburgh about 5 years ago now.
Okay.
But I did the Free Fringe with the PBH Free Fringe.
Okay, yeah.
And I took over my first solo show that I ever did. So I think it was a couple of years after I'd done it here in Melbourne, but it was just I thought, oh, this would be a good one to take.
Okay.
And I just wanted the experiences to see what everyone was banging on about. Cause it just seemed like there was this time in Melbourne where all my friends and stuff and everyone, all my work colleagues and stuff were like, okay, we do Melbourne and then you do a really good show at Melbourne Comedy Festival and then you take it to Edinburgh and then you just, that's what you do. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Let's go do that.
And, okay.
And then like I kind of at last minute put it all together and went, okay, yeah, I'm going. And then, so yeah, took it to Edinburgh and then I went to London as well just beforehand because I could. So I spent a couple of weeks there and I did like a trial show in London, which was fun. And I didn't really do any gigs or anything in London. I just hung out.
Okay.
Which was lovely.
Okay. But to my predominantly UK listenership, let's describe you. Who are you and how's it going?
Oh.
Hey, let's start with the easy stuff. Like, who are you and what are you doing here and what are you up to?
Rightio. Well, I'm Geraldine Hickey. You want to start with that?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
I'm a comedian.
Okay. How long have you been a comedian?
About 10 years.
Okay.
And I'm based in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's hard to talk about yourself.
Yeah, man. Okay, it's a bad question on my part. Don't worry. you've been a comedian for, did you say nine or 10 years? 10 years.
About 10 years. Oh, well, in the Comedy Festival runs a competition, the Raw Comedy, which is the equivalent of the So You Think You're Funny, is it?
Yes, gotcha, yes. Yeah.
So the winner of Raw gets sent the prizes you go to Edinburgh to compete in. So you
yeah, that's kind of a weird thing, isn't it? But like if you win, then you can be a competitor. Yeah, right.
And it's weird. So I got my start doing that, so I did that. But that was back in 2001.
Okay.
And I'd never really done comedy before and stuff, and I just went... actually, it was my mum that went... I was still living at home with my parents, and I was working at a cinema, like serving popcorn.
Okay.
And mum was like, what are you going to do for the rest of your life? You can't just work at a cinema. And I was like, well, why not? It's fun. I get free movies. And then I went, I'm going to be a comedian. And she went, oh, how are you going to do that? And I was like, oh, well, there's a competition. I'll enter that.
Okay.
And then I entered this competition and somehow managed to make it to the national finals.
Okay.
And then got runner-up.
So had you not done any gigs before you did the competition?
I'd done one or two.
Okay.
My first ever gig was in high school.
Okay.
And I had friends that were in a band.
When you say it was in high school, you were in high school, or the gig took place in high school?
Oh, sorry, I was in high school.
Okay, gotcha.
And I had friends that were in a band, and they organised a variety night where they got another band and some circus performers and stuff. And they went, you should get up and do some comedy. And I was like, yeah, I should.
Okay.
I shouldn't have.
Did you go badly?
Oh, it was the worst. And it was interesting. I remember it was August 19th. In 1997.
Okay.
And because that was the same, I pretty much died the same time as Princess Diana.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what propelled you to try it in high school? This was pre-chatting with your mum about doing something with your life.
I wanted to be an actor, and so I was really into drama and theatre and performing and stuff, and you know, and then one day in a drama class, me and a friend were acting something out, and everyone in the class laughed, and I was like, guys, I was being serious that time.
Yeah.
I wanted to, you know, I'm serious. And my drama teacher went, Jez, you know what this means? And I went, oh, I can't act.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's like, know that you're a comedian.
Okay.
You are a comedian. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I went, oh, right, I can do that. And then, yeah, and then I started writing stuff. And
so something about that seemed to click for you when the teacher said, you're a comedian. I mean, that sounds like they said it in quite a portentous kind of way rather than a casual. They just went, oh, we've discovered this is what you do.
Yeah, it was pretty much like that. And it wasn't like, oh, you should try comedy. I reckon you'd be all right. It was that, no, you are a comedian.
Yeah. And did you think, oh, that's what I am? Or
yeah,
did you think,
bit.
I don't want to be one?
Oh, no, I went, oh, no, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. You were saying you'd heard the podcast I did with Celia Piccola, where we talked about people's origin stories.
Oh, yes.
Like, it's almost like your superhero beginning. That's amazing.
Yeah,
You tried to do some serious acting, and everyone laughed, and, you know, I'm going to call it a mysterious stranger, although obviously your teacher just went, you're a comedian.
Yeah.
That's great. So you were picked and you went, yeah, that is me, that makes sense.
Yeah, it was one of those things. I just went, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I can see that now.
Okay.
I didn't know what I was going to do about it, but I...
So when you did that first gig, what did you do for your first gig? Did you have material or did you just go on and improvise?
No, I had material and it was so woeful. Oh, gosh. It was... I think some of it involved reciting the words to Wanna Be by the Spice Girls.
Okay.
And it was something like, Zigga Zigga, what's up with that? It was that kind of so bad.
Okay.
So bad. And it was like, I went on stage, I think it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and everyone was just waiting for the band to start.
Oh, man.
I was just like... But I didn't know how bad it was because, you know, I had nothing else to compare it to.
Sure.
So it was like... So, wow, this must be what it's like.
So, well, how did you react? Because something I want to say about your show that I saw was not only that I thought it was very, very funny and I laughed all the way through and I thought you were so genuine with us. I really felt like you were letting us into you.
Yeah.
One of the elements I think is a very strong suit for you, on the basis of that show, that's all you did, is that you seem to be very comfortable being there. You seem to be like a naturally, and obviously the content of the show, the subject matter is quite sad, but you, or in some ways, but you seem to be very twinkly and happy to be there and happy to be in front of us.
I am.
You do seem like someone who I would describe as, and I've got to be very careful about using this phrase on the podcast because I don't want to overdo it, but you seem like a very natural clowny person. I don't mean like a clown, like a don't email me. I keep sneaking clowns in, but I think there is something about you where if I'd met you socially, I'd have gone, oh yeah, Jezza, she's kind of a clown.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Do you feel that? Does that resonate with
absolutely.
You?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. Oh gosh, I enjoy being on that stage so much. And the night that you came to the show, to be honest, I think that was one of the best shows that I've ever had in my life.
Okay.
It was a, you know, when things just go right, there's that combination of the right people in the room, and you just get your pace right, and it's just
sure.
Everything just kind of clicks. So I had one of those nights, which was awesome fun. But I guess now I kind of reached this stage where, because I've been doing it for quite a few years, I was kind of, everything just kind of fits now where I'm not worried about what everyone else is doing. Like, I really am taking on that. You've just got to run your own, in comedy, you've just got to run your own race. So yeah. Not be concerned about what, like, for years I used to get so bitter and just, like, I'd look at friends and stuff and go, oh, look at them. Like, why are they getting more people in their shows? Mm. Or how did they get that job on TV? Or why are they getting that and I'm not getting this? And then it's just like, oh, actually, do you know what? I think I'm very lucky to be able to do what I'm doing. And I do comedy because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so I love... And once that kind of clicks in your head, it's so much more freeing and stuff up on stage. So I'm really there just to enjoy the moment and stuff.
Okay. So that's interesting because you seem like, I guess maybe it always appears like this, but watching you on stage, seeing that click has happened, it seems to me like I can't imagine you being tense and nervous and jealous and all those kind of pre-click sort of things. That's something I've heard from a couple of people, is that, you know, you worried about it for a long time and then you went, actually, I'm just going to do this for me.
Yeah.
And then it changed somehow and you went, oh, wow, this is...
Well, yeah, also I think a couple of things have changed in the last couple of years. Like, I... Because it was only, like, 2 years ago that I realised I was gay. Well, mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, I just avoided some of the signs.
Okay.
And I, so from going from doing comedy, and then once I realised I was gay, like, that's, so I just realised when I was gay, that's a kind of a really freeing kind of, oh, this is who I am. Whereas before on stage, I would do, it really felt like I was being a bit of a caricature of myself. So I used to be, you know, quite, well, I still am to a certain degree, like, really blue and dirty, just had a lot of cock jokes and raw, you know, and so it felt, since I came out, it was like, oh, so I don't need to kind of have this idea of myself and project that online, but I just be myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that's fascinating to me that you were doing stand-up for like 8 years maybe without knowing that you were gay.
Yeah.
So were you
plenty others knew.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But so you would do it. I mean, was your stuff like the show that I saw was incredibly personal, and we'll talk about how much of it. I mean, it feels like it was all true.
Yeah.
And you, it seems to me like you have an incredible gift for taking a true thing and finding the funny in it.
Yeah.
It didn't feel imposed, any of it. It wasn't like you were trying to put stuff into funny situations. You've just got a very good way of describing a thing that, you know, a seemingly inconsequential thing that actually happened. You totally have that. You're awesome. We'll come on to that in a bit, but were you doing that sort of personal stuff before?
Mm-hmm.
And if you were, how were you doing it? Now, how were you interrogating yourself to write that material every day and not knowing that you were gay?
I don't know. Like, it just felt... I'm trying to think of other shows and what I... Because every single show that I've done has been based on truth. I'm just not good at making stuff up. but like I said, I never talked about... it was true at the time.
Sure, okay.
It's not like, I, you know, dated guys and stuff, and but so I would talk about that on stage, I guess, and the trials and tribulations that went with that. But it was true at the time, so it's, sure. You know, yeah, I don't know.
I suppose in my own practice, I do very personal stuff on stage. Yeah. I tell very true stories. And of the 3-hour-long shows that I've made, in my head, they ended up, they ended up being vehicles through which I found out something about myself.
Yes.
Like I tried, the first show that I wrote in 2010 was the first hour that I'd written just purely about and by myself. Was about how I'd tried to make all of these roads in my life to be really interesting, you know, fetish clubs and circus and being a street performer and all that stuff. But I realised that actually, if I'm honest, I'm quite a boring person. I'm quite normal, and I was sort of trying to be something that I wasn't.
Yeah.
So within that, and then I've done one show about anxiety and one show about kind of sexual selfishness, which, you know, anyone listening to this could easily have seen those shows and not known they were about that. You know, whether they were successful or not is not the point. But I suppose what I'm asking is, like, I've made shows about me and then afterwards looked at it and gone, oh, that was what was really going on.
Yeah.
So were you having similar sort of stuff? I mean, we're not just talking, you were doing a circuit 20 with cock jokes. You were doing several hours.
Yeah.
Of personal stories.
Yeah. Oh, I guess in my hour-long shows, there wasn't a lot of cock jokes, so to speak.
Okay. Well, can you give us an example? What was an early show about, like pre-discovery show?
Oh, okay. So my first show that I did, my first solo show, was about a week that I spent in a psychiatric unit. That's the show that I took to Edinburgh.
Okay.
So not a lot of love stories in that one.
Sure. Okay.
And then the next show was a family-based show because my dad's a truck driver, and it was called Trucker's Daughter.
Okay.
It was a very famous Australian song called Tucker's Daughter.
Okay, gotcha.
And that was just how, yeah, that was all family stuff. My dad has a hierarchy system in our family because I've got one brother and 4 sisters, so he ranks us all based on who calls him first for his birthday.
Okay.
Stuff like that. So,
well, like, he ranks and tells you your rank.
Yeah. I'm at number one, so.
Yeah. Okay. So to you, the system's fine. Yeah.
What else have I done? And then, okay, this is interesting. Yeah. There was one show I did, which was pretty much about how I'd never had a broken heart.
Okay.
That's always kind of like, oh, I'm having the moment right now. I'm just going, oh, yeah. Oh, of course you haven't had a broken heart because you were never attached to any guys because you were never interested in them.
Sure, okay.
So now I can look back on that and, you know, but it was based around how much I hated the movie He's Just Not That Into You.
Okay.
So I just based it all on that, and it was just like, it was just about how I couldn't relate to anything.
Sure.
In the movie.
Sure.
Or to any of the women. I'm like, of course I couldn't relate to them.
Okay.
So, anyway.
You're missing this, listeners, but the look on Geraldine's face is a picture at the moment. Oh, God, yeah.
So we're talking about now.
Okay. So the stories you were telling were... I mean, I see completely what you mean, of course. Mm. The stories you were telling were true then. That was your truth. Those were the things you were...
Yeah.
I mean, how deeply do you go into yourself when you're... If you're writing a show about how you don't relate to other women or, heterosexual relationships...
Yeah.
How deeply... Or whether it's a show about your family, how deeply do you go into yourself? Do you feel like you're bearing your soul on stage? I asked that because I think it's your work is really honest. I thought it was refreshingly honest. You were just completely yourself, and you weren't like, I didn't feel your, I think that's what I mean by clowny. I didn't feel like the persona you were giving us was anything that you were selling. It was just you.
Yes. Well, I try to do that now. So
This is my style all over. I'll ask a question and then in explaining what I mean, just completely obfuscate it. Do you feel you're bearing your soul on stage?
Yes and no. I think I'm just being me on stage. In some shows that I've done, I've gone really personal and kind of a bit deep and stuff, but only when it's necessary for the show.
Okay.
So, I think, like, in terms of this show, I don't think I went too deep.
No, you were very honest, but you weren't necessarily. Yeah. I mean, what do we mean by deep? Like, you weren't.
There was a bit of pathos in the show, but
yeah.
Not enough to make people cry.
Sure. Sure. It's the story about breaking up. It's the story about the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
What do we mean by deep?
Yeah.
Like, it was really honest, but it wasn't like you were trying to hurt us. Do you know what I mean? I suppose the word deep has something inherently angsty about it.
It wasn't like I was, you know, going so deep that people would go, feel so sorry for you.
Oh, no, but we were going, oh, God.
Yeah.
You poor bastard. Oh, yeah. We all poor bastards. Yeah, that was, some of that. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think, do I feel like I'm bearing my soul? Sometimes, but it's more me going, hey guys, this is me.
Yeah.
Aren't we all the same?
Sure. And did you think that was the case 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's always been your thing of going.
Yeah.
Hey.
Whereas
guys.
Now it really is true.
Yes, okay.
I guess, yeah.
So do you think, I mean, could there be another Jezza show in 5 years where you look back at this one and go, okay, now what I'm doing is really
true?
Yeah.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah.
So this is Jezza. I've actually left Melbourne now after an amazing month there, but I've got 3 more interviews besides this one in the can to send you over the next few weeks while I record some new ones here in New Zealand. God, my life is so difficult. Geraldine is so much fun to be around. She's just delightful. I've really been enjoying the chance to see some brilliant comics in the Southern Hemisphere that are completely new to me. Coming up soon is Alistair Tremblay-Birchall, of whom I'd never heard before, but who absolutely blew me away. And I think actually his and Geraldine's shows probably made me laugh the hardest out of everything I saw here. I'm really excited to bring you some acts that UK listeners might never have seen. And of course, what I'm hoping is that in the future, if these acts come to Edinburgh or London or wherever in Britain, you'll go and check them out. Or indeed, if you're listening in New Zealand or Australia or anywhere around the world when you get the chance, I hope that that this show can connect you to people you might not have heard of, as well as your favourite acts and people from the circuit who you're already excited about. Thank you for all of your suggestions. I'm sorry I didn't get round to doing as many people as I'd have liked, but there's always the rest of my life in which to get round to them. I've had some great emails, but I will go into them next time. I think I'm going to bring you an interview with the brilliant Tom Allen, a UK comic that I was working with throughout Melbourne. That's going to be the next podcast next week, and I'll do some emails then as well. I'm in a little bit frantic at the moment because I've just arrived here in New Zealand and I've got bundles of stuff to do and get settled and all the rest. Tickets for the Benny Boot special, the Benny Boot Comedian Live special on Wednesday the 29th of May are still available from the Facebook page. I hope they're still available. I think they are. I've not checked recently how many we've sold, but I'm sure those are going fast. If you don't know Benny, do have a Google of him, Benny Boot. He's just brilliant. So I can't wait to do that interview. And I think that's going to make a really interesting live show as well. I'll host, we'll have a guest. Benny will do a set for 20 or 30 minutes, and then we'll interview him in the second half, and only the interview will be podcast. I'm in the process of confirming some guests for the Edinburgh show. So remember, at the Edinburgh Festival, 5:45 in the Gilded Balloon every night, apart from like a middle Monday or a Wednesday or a Tuesday or something like that. But every other night of Edinburgh, so you can come and see loads and loads of ComCom goodness. And that's all for now. So get in touch at info@comedianscomedian.com or indeed at you can tweet me at ComComPod. And now let's get back to the brilliant Geraldine Hickey.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So were you funny in the pub? When you were a kid, I was going to say, for the last time in pubs when you were a kid. I mean, as a younger person, were you outside of that kind of drama experience?
Were you
kind of, you know, wisecracking with your friends type?
Yeah, but without me knowing it, it was one of those things where, you know, I'd be in class and I'd say something with no intentions whatsoever of being funny. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I'd be like, hey guys, listen to this. I'd just say something and friends would just laugh.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I don't understand why you're laughing, but I will take it.
Okay.
Thank you. So
why do you think that was?
I don't know. I think it was just the way I would say something. There were times where I would try to be funny, obviously, but I don't know. It's just, yeah, some moments it was like just the way I said something and people would laugh.
Sure. And can you, like, in terms of your shows, you must articulate that. I mean, are you sort of striving for a certain way that you say things? Do you know what I mean? When you write a description of something, like a breakup or a detail of it, or, you know, are you thinking how... I'll tell you a simpler question. But how scripted is your show? Is it all scripted and written out? Or are you describing the things and just finding ways in which to say them?
It is pretty scripted, but in terms of getting to that script is through... I don't necessarily write that much.
Okay.
I do. I'll have an idea and I... And this has evolved over the years. I used to do a lot more writing, but now it's more I have an idea and go... All right, and then I'll just get up on stage and do it.
Okay.
And then I'll kind of work out where the funny is and stuff and then go back and write it.
Sure. So do you mean it like sort of midweek open spot type things?
Yeah,
get up and kind of just try...
Yeah.
Okay, here's me working through an idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
So once I've done that, then it's kind of scripted, I guess.
I suppose what I'm getting at is, how much do you know why you're funny? Or is it just that you think, oh, something about me is funny?
A bit of both, I guess. I think 90% is like me knowing what's funny and knowing how to write a joke and knowing, you know, that... Or saying something you know that's going to be funny, but then there's that small percentage where it's like that natural thing that just comes, that people just think you're naturally funny.
Sure. You see that as quite... That's the smaller part of it. You think that's the smaller percentage?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I don't think you'd have one without the other.
Sure.
I think it's quite necessary to have that natural... Well, for me anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that helps a lot, because it's, you know, I have these moments where like I'll just say something, you know, it'll be leading to something else and people will laugh and that, you know, that confuses me, because I just go, why are you laughing at that?
Yeah.
Why? What because I want to know.
If they're laughing at the feed lines, that's an exciting experience, isn't it? That's kind of delicious that you go, okay, there's a joke coming up. Oh, you're already laughing.
Yeah. But then you get to your punchline, the thing that you actually have worked on, and then you kind of, it just, they kind of laugh a little bit, but not as much as something else that you did before. And it's
because,
like,
what is that? Because you're kind of setting up something, but I suppose there's something about the way we can see a performer set up an idea that actually tells us everything we need to know already.
Yeah. But see, it's also that frustrating thing of someone, the audience is losing it at something that you didn't plan to be funny.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, but why are you laughing at that? Because if I know that, then I can use that and...
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's not dissimilar, is it, from the sort of drama experience you were talking about? You're trying to be serious and they're laughing.
Yeah. Yes. Oh.
Maybe you should start doing tragic plays.
Oh, that could work.
That's quite interesting. I really like that idea. We just pursue that for a minute. That idea of your innocence or the performer's innocence, but maybe specifically you, because you do seem... That's kind of what I mean by that twinkle. You do seem to be kind of innocent. Yeah. And that's part of why I was laughing, because you seem so like, oh, wow. And you know what? It was sort of... It was like this.
Yeah.
And we're laughing because we're going, oh, yeah, you're bringing yourself to this really naively.
Yeah.
It's weird. I suppose, I don't know. I don't know what my line of questioning is. I'm trying to sort of uncover something in that whereby you know what it is, but maybe you don't know what
I've
it
got
is.
No idea.
Yeah.
I've got no idea.
That's equally exciting. You're just kind of mining. You're like shining a torch at a tunnel going, oh, this is, oh, apparently this. Yeah. So what are your starting points for finding the funny in something? When you walk on stage, when you walk onto an open spot with an idea of something, why have you selected that idea? Because it made you laugh, or because, or you know, what sorts of things strike you as things that would be quite Geraldine?
I look at like when I'm trying to write new material and stuff, I guess I'll look at something that's funny that's happened, that's like for instance, you know, at work, because I also work in childcare as well, and so I like to, kids are a good source of material
there. Sure.
So I kind of, something will happen at work, I mean, and things kind of evolve. I don't think of an example, like or just interesting things that happened to me, like things out of the blue. Like one day at work, we found a canary. Yeah, a canary in the sand pit.
Okay.
That's odd. It's just odd that you rock up to work and there's a canary in the sand pit. And it's not like, I think we think that it was a pet and it fell out of the window, but it was quite possibly quite hurt and stuff. Anyway, I thought, you know, we put it in a box and stuff, and we're like, someone's going to look after this. And it was like, I had this moment of, oh, I can be responsible. I'm going to have a pet. And then I took it home and stuff and died the next day. But I just wanted to try and talk about... I want to talk about this bird. And it was more about me taking the responsibility of, you know, knowing that I was responsible enough of taking this bird home and stuff. And the material about the bird did not work at all.
Okay.
Because it was just like a long, boring, long-winded story. So, but the lead-up into it about me becoming more responsible...
Yes.
It's now a really tight 5 minutes that I have.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's actually a really nice... No, I've not encountered that before, but I suppose I've done that... have I even done... I'm struggling to think if I've even done that myself, but that's a fascinating approach to go, I'm going to go on and tell one story, and maybe that helps your naive approach, because you're not thinking about the preamble.
Yeah.
You're thinking about the end point, and that lets the preamble breathe.
Yeah. Because that was all the stuff at the start of the show when I was talking about how I'm... you know, becoming a more responsible adult, and I gave examples of why that was, you know, and when I was first doing it, it was like I was doing this and this and this, and then it all came together when I found this bird.
Yeah.
But then the bird died.
Okay.
And now the bird's gone completely out of the story.
Yes, because maybe the idea, that's too kind of, maybe it's too clunky an idea.
Mm.
That's an idea that you could have had rather than a thing you've stumbled upon, maybe.
Yeah.
So how much of your show is true? Is it all word for word true? Are you? It feels like one of the most true shows that I've seen. I know you twiddle the timing slightly.
Yeah, no, it's all pretty much true. I added a bit of mayonnaise to the sandwich.
Okay.
So to speak.
Okay.
I added a little bit of, you know, sizzle to the love story, I guess.
Sure.
You know, I kind of made it sound as if I was a bit heartbroken about the fling girl, but sure. I'm still kind of, well, maybe something's going to... I just wanted the audience to come out thinking, well, maybe they will get together. Oh,
yeah, sure,
still
okay.
Hope. There's still
okay.
hope, but...
I love that. It's a line where you say, yeah, and she's actually in the room yeah. tonight, and everyone looks around you like, don't be soft. That's really nice.
Yeah, I do love doing that. It's funny, one night I made one girl turn to her best friend and look at her, thinking that it was her.
Yeah. Brilliant.
What are you doing?
Brilliant.
Yeah. So much fun. So I added, you know, a little... So, but other than that, though, it's all... Yeah, it's all true.
The person... Remind me of the name or the name you used. I don't know if you used the real name of the...
I didn't... Connie was the name. The
stage version.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So is Connie likely to ever see the show?
She has seen the show.
She has seen the show.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah,
you've
so
written a show about the end of a relationship with someone.
Yeah.
And that person came to see it. What was that like?
Yeah, it was fine because I knew she was coming and
we are
really good friends.
Okay.
And, you know, when it turns, you know, sure we broke up and stuff, but... We had an end date on our...
Sure, of course.
We had a fling,
yeah.
And we put an end date on it. So it was... It's all very kind of organised, because, you know, we're lesbians.
I can't believe you actually... That's... I mean, I believe that it's real, but
yeah.
That conceit, that idea of having... Let's have a fling, but so we don't get involved, let's put an end date to it.
Yeah.
That's astonishing.
It is. But, yeah, it doesn't always work...
Sure.
But for us, it did.
Okay.
It worked really well. But I think it's because we're both on the same page.
Gotcha. So having her in the audience, it's not like she was an ex that you were trying to prove anything to. I mean, as a younger person, I'm sure I had that experience
yeah.
of, like, breaking up with someone, writing jokes
yeah.
about how heartbroken I was, and thinking, yeah, one day they're going to be in the room, and I'm going to do jokes about how heartbroken I am, and they'll simultaneously see how sensitive and erudite and funny I am. Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, and because, yeah, we are good friends, and I told her, when we were in the fling, I said, I'm going to write a show about this, this is great, and then...
Okay.
So she was, she knew about
it. That is organised.
Yeah.
This will one day become a show.
Yeah. I was just really struggling to come up with an idea, like, you know. Anyway, so she knew about everything, and then before the show, though, we were out one day, and I was just like, hey, just... When you come and see the show, just know that I've added a little bit of...
Sure.
And she's like, okay, I get it.
Okay.
It's fine. She was like, oh, I get it. You're saying this to me because you're thinking that I'm going to come watch a show and then go, oh, no.
You
need to go have a coffee and discuss where our relationship's at.
Yeah, right. Okay.
It's okay. It's all good. So it was quite comfortable having her in the room. That was fine. It was... What... But she dated someone after me for a while, and she tried to do the fling with this next girl and put an end date on it. And the next girl went, oh, no, that sounds ridiculous, putting an end date on it. And then so they ended up, they broke up, you know, not long ago. So they're both still a little bit heartbroken. So it was odd having the next girlfriend come in and watch the show and me talking about...
Sure.
This girl that has just broken her heart. So that was...
Oh, my God, that is quite complex, isn't
yeah.
it? Did you feel extra responsibility on stage, or did you just go, I'm going to do the show, this is the show?
Yeah, I kind of just did the show. And I said to Connie, her real name's Courtney, but it doesn't matter. I said to her, I said, you know, you should send her along to the show because it's like... And I thought it would be a good coping thing for her. Idiot. Idiot. Anyway, I think it was quite confronting for her.
Just to briefly, I know what my next thing's going to be, mm-hmm. but to briefly digress just back to the sexuality issue,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that I noticed reminded me then was you said, because, hey, we're lesbians. And obviously to you that's only been an identity for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So is there a certain pleasure in saying that, you know, I'm like this because, you know, because I am a lesbian?
Yeah.
That's got to be quite a fun... I mean, how exciting to be in your early 30s and go, oh, there's this, yeah. You know, not only is there almost like, it's a combination of there's a gang I can join and a kind of a culture I can be part of. And also, it's a sense of belonging because actually that's been the whole case all along.
Yeah. And it's that, that's why I don't like shoes unless they're sneakers.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, it's that belonging. And it is nice. It's really nice.
Do you anticipate your sexuality and your awareness of your sexuality becoming an issue in your public persona?
No, not at all.
It's nothing to do with it?
No.
Or it's not an issue to you?
Not an issue to me.
Sure. I mean, we when Saskia and I came to see the show, we walked away thinking, oh my God, you could be massive because you can talk to men and you can talk to women in that fairly unique kind of relationship. Like, I haven't seen another gay woman who hits the same notes as you do on stage.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that really, I kind of was like, well, you know, A, we were both kind of buzzing because it had been such a good show.
Yeah.
But also, I was sort of thinking, oh, wow, this, you know, if you... Or, you know,
how do I market that?
How do you market it? Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Like, you could, you don't have to make a decision to market it or package it a particular way, of course, but it sort of feels like, whoa, you could do because you're super approachable to everybody. You've got the innocence, you've got the comedy, you've got all that sort of stuff, but there's also a way in which you were battering that audience around and mocking the guys in relationships with the girls, mocking the girls in relationship with the guys in this incredibly warm way.
Yeah.
I must admit, part of me had that kind of, I don't know if you ever get this, like you see someone, you walk away starting to think, oh man, if I was an agent, I could sell that.
Well, I guess with this show, I did make a conscious decision in when I was writing this show to make my material more accessible. So I'd always been criticised for being too blue and stuff. Like, people were like, oh, you'll never be on TV because you've got such a potty mouth and stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And your material's too, you know, dirty and stuff. And then last year's show was my coming out show. So that was, you know, obviously very much, you know, aimed at the gay community, so to speak. Whereas, you know, as you know, very gay heavy. Whereas in this show, I wanted it to be, just a bit more, still be me, but just a bit more accessible. So I made a conscious decision not to, you know, have any sex jokes in there and stuff. And
It's a very accessible love story. It was like an every person love story.
So, and also over the past year or so, I've done a lot more talking to the audience, where I used to be terrified of that.
Really?
Terrified.
Okay.
So
you're very good at it. You've got a really good relationship with us.
Yeah, because I kind of don't care.
Yeah.
I just have that moment where, I used to be terrified of, you know, any MCing gigs and stuff like that, whereas now, oh gosh, I love it. It's so much fun. It's just, it kind of, I feel like it takes the pressure off being funny when you're MCing. It's like, oh, actually, I can just get up and talk to the audience and stuff and see where that
goes.
That's
funny. I feel the opposite. Whenever I'm naturally geared towards being an MC, is my background. I'm, you know, quite improvising. Mm. But I always feel this crushing weight of responsibility for the night. I'm like, I can't take too many risks. I can't fuck about too much because it's got to be a good gig for everyone.
Yeah.
But that would be really nice to put that down and go, oh, what a great opportunity. I don't have to be funny. I could just, all I could do is take this.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, you still, you know that you are funny because that's why you're there. So you have your set material and stuff, but when I'm MCing, I take that pressure off of trying to be funny. It's just like, you go out there and have a good time. And also, like, I used to do a lot of improv and stuff as well, and it's that thing where, like, people will just laugh at, you know, if you ask the audience a question and they'll go whatever, and then you say something, but I think the audience is just amazed that you've got something to say back to them.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
So, like, it, you know, at the moment I'm asking people what their favourite animal is, and you know, sometimes they'll just say, oh, it's a tiger. And then I'll just start imitating a tiger, just going, rah, rah. And the audience just loves it. It's just like, this is so silly. This is so silly. But just the fact that you're doing something, they like that, I guess. So, yeah, and now that I, you know, once you take that pressure off yourself to try and be funny and just know that you are funny and that something, if it doesn't work, doesn't matter, you move on to something that you know is funny. But I think it's kind of this freeing thing up on stage, just to be able to, yeah. So I've enjoyed that, opening up that new thing of talking to the audience and stuff.
So in terms of your accessibility or otherwise, when you were being Blue, when you were being Potty Mouth, did you care at the time? Did you consider, oh, this is stopping me from being marketable? You know, did you...
Obviously... Yeah, it kind of went in and out a little bit. It was like, there were moments where like, oh, no, I'm just being me. I'm being true to myself and I'm just getting up stage and, you know, I love what I do. And, you know, some people really love this material, so... We'll go with it. And then, obviously, I'd have other friends that would, you know, have this meteoric rise. And I'd be sitting back just going, oh, I know I'm just as good as them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's when that all that bitter stuff came in. Because it was like, oh, God, what do I have to do? And it's like, because I just felt like I was stuck in this, you know, I think you have to be... You know, I think I need to be who I am, but also, do I have to change that? I don't want to change who I am to get a job on TV.
That's a weird thing, isn't it? You kind of go, I know that I need to be who I am.
Yeah.
But there's a certain feeling that, well, what if who I am isn't what's being looked for?
Yeah, yeah. So, but now I think, so it's nice that I've kind of reached a stage where it's like, oh, no, I'm still being who I am, but I kind of think I've been more who I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk then about the market. Let's talk about Australia. And obviously, I mean, you're another Australian comic who I've spoken to who has to also have a day job, despite having years and years of experience.
Yeah.
So is it... have you had periods of being a full-time comic?
Yeah, I have.
And
yeah.
What's that like? What's the difference? And how do you feel going forward? How do you feel? What do you feel your chances of not needing to do any other work?
Well, I have another job. Like for years, I used to work in bars and stuff, and then was always like, oh, I've got to do comedy full time. And then I did at one stage. I quit my job at the pub and I went, right, that's it, I am a comedian. And I did that for about a year or so or more, and it was it had its ups and downs. And then I work in childcare now because I actually really love it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I kind of see that I have two careers, and it's not like I'm doing one to so I can do the other.
Sure. Okay.
So it's, you know, I do childcare because I love it, and I do comedy because I love it, and they both earn me, you know. And it's interesting, now I'm earning more money in comedy than I was when I was doing it full time.
Okay. Okay.
So
what great position to be in. Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So
the double threat. I can wipe asses and slap down hecklers. Great.
So it's and also I think it's, you know, it's that thing where you make money, you know, I've got more money to invest in comedy, like, you know, invest in shows and stuff. So there's that aspect. But also mentally it's so good for balance, and I just find that when I was doing comedy full time, I really struggled with just being alone all the time and stuff, and not having in terms of writing, I was never one of those ones to go, right, today is my writing day and I'm going to go and do this. It was just like, oh, I've got nothing to do.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at being self-motivated and stuff. So now that I have this other job, this other focus, it gives, you know, I have to plan things. I go, all right, I have to work in the afternoon, so okay, you've got that gig tonight, so in the morning that's when you've got to prepare and
gotcha.
Stuff. So,
okay.
And also it's just nice, especially during festival time, people like around festival go, oh, you're so happy, like why, like what's your secret to getting through this festival? I'm like, well, I'd sit at home all day Googling myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, this is the first year that I haven't read reviews of my shows and stuff, and people are like, oh, how do you do that? How
yeah,
do you
right.
Well, I've got something else to do. Like, I get to go to work every day and not have a phone and just kind of do something else.
This is the first time I'm aware that the best of show that I'm doing has had a review, and I haven't looked at it. I've deliberately not looked
at it.
It's so empowering. This is all Carl Donnelly's doing.
Yeah.
This is an actor we're working with in Adelaide.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's great. I'm not part of that. I'm not part of that system anymore.
Yeah. And also stop reading other people's reviews. I think the first couple of...
Well, that's the next thing I need to learn to do, because I do still do that. And
Because the first couple of days of the festival, I was, you know, reading reviews and stuff. And then I read a review of a friend show that I'd seen, and it was just like, I got so mad. I'm like, what are you on about? There's nothing like... And then I went, oh, actually, no more reviews. No more anybody's reviews, because I'm just going to disagree with them and go, you're an idiot. And then I just get upset, and it's like, oh, just leave it. So I do. So nice.
Will you
so
read them afterwards? Will you read reviews of your show afterwards, or do you just not engage with that at all?
I don't know yet. This is my first time. Like, my manager.
Wouldn't it be fun to never have read them?
Yeah. Because my manager was like, oh, I've packaged them all your reviews up and I've put them all on file for you, so I'll give them to you at the end of festival. I was like, okay, so I don't know yet.
So how do you feel about comedy in Australia? How do you feel about the state of comedy? Do you feel like it's in a good place at the moment? Is it exciting? A thing that people in the UK are obsessed with at the moment, me as well, is that it seems to be really busy. There's an awful lot of people starting it. And
maybe there's
fewer gigs rather than more gigs.
I think there's been, in the last few years, there's been a big change in comedy in Australia, I think, like in terms of... There was a bit of a lull for a few years in that... Especially in Melbourne, it just seems like a lot of, you know, punters in Melbourne would only come to see comedy during the festival.
Yeah, okay.
So straight after festival, it was like, oh, festival's on, it's comedy, woo, how great is comedy? And then as soon as festival was over, it was like no gigs anywhere. There was only a couple of rooms in Melbourne that run year-round, whereas... Now there are some really, really good rooms that a couple of comics have started. There's a brilliant open mic room on a Monday night that three comics run, and it's a bit of an institution now. It's been running for a few years, and it's so much fun. And they run it so well that it's packed every night, regardless of who's on. And
What's it called? What's that one called?
It's called Spleen.
Okay.
The bar's called Spleen. So
gotcha.
It's a Spleen comedy.
Okay.
And it's free. Like, it's a free night, and they have, like, eight comics on or something, so everyone does 5 minutes, and it's such a joy. It's such a joy to do that room, because it's run so well as well. So... And so one of the guys that ran that, it's Carl Chandler, and he'd set up another couple of rooms as well, so more professional kind of, so, you know, that's like an open mic room, that's where you go to try new stuff, and then he's got other rooms where, you know, he has a headliner and support and MC and stuff, so paid gigs, because for a while it was like so many gigs in Melbourne, but just not paid.
Yeah,
I think the big problem in Melbourne comedy, and anywhere... comedy in Australia, it's like people go, like, especially pubs will go, yeah, let's put on a comedy night, and then there'll be some new comedian that comes and goes, yeah, I can't get any gigs, I'll just start my own room, and then they'll go to the pub and go, oh, I want to put on a comedy night, and they'll go, yeah, great, do it, and then the pub will give you no money to put on that night.
Sure.
And they go, yeah, you can just use our room.
Yeah.
You can just use our room and that's fine. And oh, you can take money on the door and mm-hmm. we'll just take the bar kind of mm-hmm. thing. So these clubs go, oh, well, it's an open mic night, so we'll charge like $5 and yeah. then we don't need to pay anybody. And then, so I just think that, and now it's like people are running rooms, and I think the owners of bars should kind of step up a little bit and go, actually, because and now some are as well.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, prepared to pay so that they get good acts, so yeah. it becomes a good night.
Yeah. They kind of,
or pro acts, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. They invest in it a little bit more. Sure. So, and it's still happening. Like I was having a chat to some other people that have just recently started up a new room, and it's heaps of fun. It's a great room and stuff, and it's, and they were like, but there's a, they've got a crappy mic stand and the lighting's really bad, and it's like, why don't you get the guys at the pub to you know pay for this? And they're like, oh, you know, we could, but you know. And I said, do they give you any money to put this night on? And they're like, no. And I was like, look how many people. This is a Tuesday night, and this place is packed.
Yeah,
you guys weren't here.
Yeah, everyone's buying 3 drinks.
Yeah,
and yeah, sure. Sure. So when it comes to comedy festival, do you have, and specifically your involvement, do you have any kind of strategy? Do you have any kind of career path? Do you have anything kind of worked out, or is it just a case from year to year you enjoy making shows, so you make shows?
I really, really enjoy doing live stand-up, so I think I'd really eventually like to be in bigger venues and tour more. But I think in Australia you can't really do that unless you get on TV.
Yeah, okay.
It's interesting, like, even... I was talking to a friend about it last night. It's about Asher Trelevin, which you would know quite well.
Yes, I've interviewed him a couple of days ago, yeah.
He's been nominated for the Barry Award twice, which is, you know, the best show at festival. Yeah.
And he's the only person to get 5 stars in 2 consecutive years in The Age, someone told me the other night. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And a friend was saying last night, talking about other people just going, like, when he was flying for his show and kind of recommending other people, and he was like, oh, you guys would, you know, Asher Trelevin, and Punter would go, no idea who he is.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't been on TV.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's incredible. I wonder how much of that is also true in Edinburgh, because I feel in the UK circuit, specifically, you really notice it at Edinburgh. It's almost become a streamed process whereby either you're one of the comics who's done all the UK shows, Buzzcocks, Mock the Week, all the rest of it. Or you're not.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who on the top of their posters can say, you know, star of, name the same 6 TV shows, the Apollo Roadshow, whatever. And then there's people who can't say that.
Yeah.
And so people will always take a punt more, right? And you'll get bigger rooms, bigger audiences and so forth. And the idea of touring in the UK as a comic who doesn't have any TV is sort of impossible.
Yeah.
Took me a couple of years to realise that. Okay.
Yeah.
This isn't viable. Doesn't matter how well Edinburgh goes, it's not viable.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that reflected here. I mean, is there a lot of TV shows? Is there a lot of TV opportunities?
It's like there's no show on Australian TV at the moment where you can do stand-up.
Really?
Doesn't exist.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't exist.
So there's no... Oh, because what changed the... I don't know if you're aware of, like, Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow and Live at the Apollo and stuff. That really changed the face of it. That suddenly let loads and loads of...
Yeah.
Obviously, it's still an issue because it's loads of comics, but it's really only the same 20 or 30.
Yeah.
So... And I think that's been warmly embraced because it's super cheap to make and it's really popular. So it can surely only be a matter of time till something like that catches on over here.
Well, they did do the... on ABC, they did the... They filmed during festival, like the late night shows during festival, and they put that up. But that was, you know, a special, I guess. But there was no... Yeah, the closest we got, there was a morning chat show called The Circle, which was based on... literally based around... what's that that one with Whoopi Goldberg and The View.
Okay.
This is based around that.
Sure.
It's just four women chatting and stuff. It's a morning show, and then but occasionally they would have a stand up on it.
Okay.
And that was
in
that
the
was,
morning.
Oh yeah, that was the only.
That's
only,
crazy,
isn't it?
That's crazy. So people in Melbourne come out to Melbourne Comedy Festival. It's an internationally recognised huge comedy festival, and people come out and see people who've been on the few things on TV. And there's loads of people who are being great at doing festival shows but aren't getting audiences.
Yeah.
So what needs to happen? Do there need to be more opportunities on TV, or
I don't know.
Probably needs to be educated more about the availability of other acts?
Yeah, maybe. I think a lot of things. Or maybe, you know, maybe I should make, you know, some YouTube clips or something.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I don't know. It was funny. I was in sharing a cab with a group of people last Saturday night, because it's impossible to get a cab. Anyway, I'm in a cab with these other people, and they'd recognised my friend who had been on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, "Oh, you're that chick from that show," and blah blah blah. And then she's like, "Oh, this is my friend. She's a comedian doing a show at the festival." And I'm like, "Oh, really?" And one guy goes, "Oh, I'm going to the festival on Thursday night." I was like, "Oh, what are you going to go see?" He's like, "Oh, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I'm going." It's like, "Dude, it's like 485 shows. Like, which one are you going to go and see?" And then this other girl was like, "Are you doing a show?" And I was like, "Yeah, yeah." She goes, "Where are you doing it?" I said, "At the Forum." I'm like, "At the Forum? That's a big place." I'm like, "Oh, relax. I'm in a tiny room. I'm in a tiny room that seats, like, you know, 40 people." And she goes, "40 people? You can fill that room?" And I'm like, "What?" So she goes, "How do you do... Because we don't go see people that we haven't heard of."
Yeah,
we
right.
We go and see people that we know that, you know... We don't go see local people. We see the internationals and stuff. So...
Jesus.
Yeah.
And you slap them.
Oh, it is true. You don't go and see stuff.
Yeah.
Occasionally you'll find someone that'll take a punt and, you know, but... And I think also, you know, it's that thing that happens that one person will go and see comedy. They'll take a punt on a show and it'll be rubbish. Mm-hmm. And then they go, "Oh, comedy's bad."
Yeah.
And they won't see anything else ever again.
So that was Geraldine. I loved that interview. She's so much fun to spend time with. I'm a huge fan of her work and of her as a person. I hope you got something out of that. I think that was a really fascinating interview. Interesting stuff about Melbourne and, well, all the stuff you've just heard. Let's not go into too much depth. You've just listened to it after all. So thank you to Geraldine. Thank you very much to Graham Crockford for sound support and technical support, and Dan Melrose for the music, as ever. Next week, Tom Allen, the fabulous Tom Allen. I'm editing that one at the moment as well, and I'm really looking forward to bringing you that podcast. And indeed, some other ones from Melbourne. I'm from New Zealand. God, it's all rolling into one. I'm exhausted. I'm going to go and sleep for an hour. Thanks. Speak to you soon. Bye bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.